fumbled for his key. Wishing now that he'd arrived quietly, let himself into the flat, allowed himself a few moments to wind down.
"Ah, Joe," came a voice.
He almost dropped his leather bag. Roz was pushing her way into the shop, nearly tripping over a toddler clutching a soft toy, a duck almost as big as her.
"I thought I saw you outside. I'm glad I've caught you. I've just bumped into Paul from Strutton Sons, and he tells me they'll be handling the sale."
Jo was watching her mouth flap open, hearing the words as if through a fog.
"Sale? Paul?"
Then he remembered the name. Strutt and Sons. So that was why Clara was giving him the cold shoulder. They weren't due to be here till next week. He'd cancelled their call this morning, had been going to call them back.
"He's given me a rough estimate, but we can discuss that privately. Apparently you haven't confirmed anything yet. I'm a bit frustrated that you've gone through an estate agent. We could have saved on fees, but..."
Her face broke into a wide smile. She had a dark red lipstick mark on one front tooth.
"I'm sure you can be generous. Shall we talk upstairs?"
He found himself nodding, not wanting to stay in the shop in the arctic presence of Clara, who was now clattering change onto the counter and glaring at him openly. Roz yapped all the way up the stairs, and as Joe pushed open the door to the flat, he felt a pang of regret for agreeing to talk to her now. Lady Carcar obviously agreed, greeting him with a robust screech and a cry of,
"I wish I knew how to quit you!"
"Sorry about that," he mumbled, putting his bag down.
On the counter in the kitchen, Clara had left a batch of bread rolls on a plate, a smiley face drawn on a piece of paper next to it. She must have put it there before the estate agent came. God knows what emoticon she'd choose now. Roz was moving through the flat, opening doors and cupboards, scribbling things down on a piece of paper.
"I'm so pleased she's selling. I thought that Danish girl might be here for good. The article in the paper made me worry."
"Article?" Joe asked, confused.
Roz took the local paper out of her handbag as she marched past.
"Page 6. She's very photogenic, of course, so they've gone with an enormous photograph. She'll be all over the website, too. They call it clickbait, you know."
Joe barely heard her next questions as he stared at the photo. Clara in the shop, surrounded by toys and children, grinning from ear to ear.
"Has your mother ever applied for planning permission to extend? Is there a firewall to next door? When was the boiler installed?"
What had he done? Why had he let Roz in here? He tried to answer the questions, realizing as he did that he knew next to nothing about the flat. He kept picturing Clara's face in the shop below, the look she had given him. He pulled his arms across his body into a hug. Why hadn't he told her he'd been to see the estate agent? Then again, how was he to know they were just going to show up that day? Roz was in the bathroom, running a finger along the surface of the bath, peering out of the window as if she could see through the frosted glass.
"Is it a power shower? Is there a water softener?" "No likey, no lighty!"
Roddy, clearly noticing the shift in mood, wound himself around Joe's legs, rubbing up against his calves.
"Run, Forrest, run!" "Is there a dryer? Is that a built-in dishwasher? Is the oven gas or electric?" "Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn!"
Joe felt an overwhelming urge to shout at them both to shut up. He hadn't asked for any of this. He thought of his mother in sunny Spain and experienced a flash of envy. He wanted to be on a beach, feeling the sun on his skin, not dealing with frosty looks and nosy neighbours and endless questions and the bloody parrot sounding like voices in his head.
"Where are the meters? Is there a stopcock?"
He needed to explain things. He was answering Roz's questions in bumbling half-sentences, planning what he was going to say to Clara throughout, wanting to get rid of that expression on her face. He needed to tell her that he wanted his mum to have options, to know that she could have any life she wanted. She'd worked so hard for so long,
and he needed her to know that it hadn't been for nothing. He thought back to the uncertainty when they'd first moved here, how she'd worried constantly about bills, and how he'd been so desperate to make sure she never had to worry like that again. It seemed an age before he managed to remove Roz, promising to ring her when he'd discussed things with the estate agent, practically bundling her out of the front door and into the street. Then he took a breath and headed through the side door back into the shop, squaring his shoulders, preparing himself for Clara's disappointed looks, her scowls. She was all warmth and laughter now, though, draped over the counter, smiling coyly up at the man who'd been here the other day, the local journalist, giggling at something he'd said, looking up at him with those big blue eyes. What was he doing back again, hanging around the shop like a bad smell? He looked like an extra in Point Break, all long brown hair and holey jumpers. Joe could hear them talking as he stepped around a boy gnawing at a plastic minion keyring, almost tripping over two girls playing with racing cars in the aisle. Clara's light laugh as she moved back around behind the counter, throwing a remark over her shoulder. Something about the way she did it made his fists clench, and he walked across to her.
"So, were you going to mention it?"
he huffed. The journalist looked up, a frown forming. Joe didn't look at him, pointedly staring directly at her.
"Mention what?"
she lifted her chin, a challenge to him. Why was he behaving like this? He knew he should apologize, but something about their closeness wound him up. The smug way Mr. Journalist was looking at him through his rectangular glasses, as if he were auditioning to be a Specsavers model.
"Paul coming," he went on. "Did he take photographs? Measurements? What did he say? Or did you just send him away?"
Clara looked affronted, her eyebrows knitting together, her eyes icy. He'd never seen her look like that before, and he stepped back.
"I showed him in, and he took his photos and measurements and got his grubby hands all over the flat, and then he left you this."
She thrust a card at him. It missed his hand and fluttered to the floor. He picked it up, already starting to feel foolish.
"Right. Good. I'd better be ringing him, then."
"You'd better do that,"
Clara agreed, her cheeks two spots of pink.
"Now, if you don't mind, I'm talking to a customer while there's still a shop to run."
She gestured to the man at the counter, who was staring openly at the exchange.
"And you should be thanking Sam for writing such a wonderful piece. Everyone came to the workshop opening because of his article."
She turned a beaming smile on the journalist and twisted away from Joe.
"I saw it."
"No problem, mate," the journalist smiled at him, his green eyes piercing. Clara still had her back to him. He had been dismissed. He felt his mouth open, a cutting response lost somewhere, no doubt to resurface hours later when he was replaying the conversation in his head. He shouldn't have to justify himself to her. He'd just been doing what was best for his mother. He wanted her to be comfortable as she got older. She'd always put him first, and he wanted to be sure he was doing everything he could to look after her now. He looked back at Clara, all the prepared lines lost somewhere inside him.
Why had he gone on the attack?
Why had he taken it out on her? He spun round, spotting the boy munching on the minion.
"You'll need to pay for that," he said, marching back through the shop and out of the door.
Louisa. "Am refusing to recognize your QI. It is a silly, invented word. Acceptable Q words include queen, quiz, quintessential, but not QI, which means nothing."
Gavin. "Quintessential would never happen."
Louisa. "Don't be cheeky. Of course it could if you had essential and then added quint on the next go. Anyway, stop trying to distract me from the fact that you are a complete and utter QI. I have made up my own definition for it."
Gavin. "So, Does QI mean lovable and sexy rogue?
Louisa.
Only a QI would think that.
Gavin.
Sad face.
Gavin. Also, do you really want to sell?
Chapter 22. Clara had closed the shop a little late, dragging herself up to the flat, spooning food into Roddy's bowl and topping up Lady Carcar's dish.
That's the way, I like it.
She gave the parrot a weak smile. Staring at the ingredients in front of her, she had the overwhelming urge to shove everything onto the floor, pack a bag and head out of the door. What a day. The shop had been busy throughout, the takings way up, and her legs ached from being on her feet. She'd even thought about restocking. The shelves were less crowded now. A few lines sold out completely. But what was the point? Her eyes flicked to Joe's bedroom door. Was he there? Was he drawing up spreadsheets, working out profits, contacting agents or potential buyers? She found herself inching across the kitchen on tiptoe, freezing as one of the wooden boards let out a telltale creak, lifting her foot to get closer.
I am your father!
Screamed Lady Carcar as the door in front of her flew open and Joe appeared.
Gah! Said Clara, hand flying to her chest, trying to pretend she wasn't lurking outside his room.
He raised an eyebrow as she knelt on the floor and rubbed at an imaginary mark.
Cleaning, she mumbled, hoping her face wasn't going red.
Luke, I am your father!
Shut up, Lady C,
Joe said, causing an audible parrot huff and the fluttering of a number of feathers before she turned to the corner.
All right, shithead!
Joe held out a hand as if to help Clara up. She ignored it, scuttling back to the kitchen, back turned as she washed her hands.
I'm going to make the fondue,
she called over her shoulder, not wanting to look at him. Why had she invited him anyway? Maybe he would go out. There was a pause and she wondered if he was still standing there.
That sounds great, he said. Can I help? Do anything for it?
They were obviously not going to talk about what had happened earlier. Was he planning to apologize for snapping at her?
No, all under control, she said, remembering the hundreds of things she had to do but not wanting him to work alongside her, hoping he'd get the hint and stay away.
At least let me go out and buy some wine.
She heard him pick up his car keys, dared to look back. He was shrugging on his overcoat and gave her a small smile. She looked away, reaching for a garlic clove to start chopping.
Thanks,
she said, not looking up again, waiting for the click of the door. He loitered for a few seconds more before she heard the smallest sigh, and then he was gone. She felt herself sag with relief, moving to turn up the volume on the radio, enjoying the simple task of preparing the meal, feeling better knowing he wasn't in the flat too. She kept picking from the enormous pile of grated cheese in front of her, waiting for the beer to start simmering. She'd added the chopped garlic and mustard powder and was reaching for the Worcestershire sauce when she heard footsteps on the stairs, and Joe staggered in under an enormous box, patches of rainwater on his coat and hair damp. He placed the box on the counter and removed more than half a dozen bottles.
I wasn't sure what went with fondue, he said. So I bought one of everything.
She spotted champagne, prosecco, an expensive red wine, three different types of white, a pudding wine. She picked up the nearest bottle, reading the label as he continued to talk.
I think that's for dessert, he said in a rush. I'm not normally a fan, but I know how you like sweet things.
She looked up at him sharply. Was this a dig about her weight? His expression was neutral, though. In fact, as he raked a hand through his dark hair, she could almost have been fooled into thinking he was nervous.
I'll lay the table, he said,
moving across to the sideboard and reaching for coasters, candlesticks, napkins. He arranged things in the same way she had done a few nights before, standing back to admire his handiwork before remembering what was missing and fetching a vase from under the sink.
Won't be long.
He disappeared off, and Clara nipped into her bedroom, quickly pulling on a dress over leggings, dashing on some eye makeup, and spritzing her favourite perfume onto her wrists. The fondue was bubbling by the time Gavin, Lauren and Patrick arrived. Gavin popped open the champagne and discovered that Louisa was the proud owner of some lovely-looking crystal glasses.
"Cheers,"
he said, toasting Clara, leaning back against the kitchen counter to sip at his drink. "Where's..." Lauren began just as Joe appeared in the doorway, coat now soaked through, hair dripping, clutching a bunch of twigs. He looked like Heathcliff back from the moors.
"They're for the table,"
he explained. "Here, let me," Lauren said, rushing across the room to take the spindly branches from him. Patrick looked at Clara and raised an eyebrow. Lauren became intensely focused on arranging the twigs in the vase in the centre of the table.
"What?"
she mouthed when she finally looked up at her husband.
"So, Joe,"
and Patrick was off, asking him questions about work, about sport, moving across to the living room where Gavin was already sitting in the suede armchair looking right at home.
"Joe seems taller," Lauren commented, pouring herself a glass of champagne.
Clara couldn't help a small giggle.
"I thought you loathed him," she said in a low voice.
"Hmm." Lauren was looking over at the men distractedly.
"Oh, I do. He seems so boorish. But, well, he is quite easy on the eye, isn't he?" she said.
"You toss," nudged Clara.
"What does that mean?" Lauren asked.
"You don't want to know."
"How rude," Lauren said, reaching over and stealing a piece of cheese.
"Heya!"
Clara narrowly missed her hand as she tried to slap it away. She couldn't help the warmth that stole over her. There were people in the flat. It was Sunday the next day, and it was raining outside. This was how things were meant to be. So what if Joe had plans? She would make sure tonight wasn't ruined by that. She would just focus on everyone else. Keep their contact to the bare minimum.
"Dinner's ready,"
she called, ushering them all to the table. The meal was a success, Gavin leaning back in his chair and patting his stomach, Lauren making some pretty obscene noises all the way through, Patrick covering a burp with a hand, and Joe practically licking the plate clean. Clara was told to stay where she was as they all got up to help clear away and tidy, and she enjoyed sitting back, sipping at her glass of Chablis as she watched them. The others were chatting and laughing, but Gavin was quiet, and she remembered his face in the shop earlier when he'd realised Joe might be selling. He hadn't spoken much that evening, and was looking at Joe now with a funny expression on his face, as if he was planning something. They returned to the table, and Clara got up to start on the pudding, heading to the fridge to get the double cream. Lost in a rhythmic whisking, her mind miles away, she was distracted by Joe's laugh. She heard it so little, really. It was an unguarded sound, a low, long, infectious rumble, and she found her mouth twitching in response. She realised this was the longest she'd seen Joe in any one place. Normally he was darting off to talk on his mobile or link up to a conference call or check a screen for some share price. Here he was looking positively relaxed, his usually pale face softer in the candlelight, his grey eyes accentuated by the dark eyebrows. His hair had dried, the ends slightly curled. He was laughing at something Patrick had said, one flat hand smacking his thigh. Clara found herself staring at the hand for the longest time.
"Everything all right?" Lauren appeared next to her, peering into the saucepan. "It's boiling."
Clara snatched her gaze away. Lauren was right. It was about to boil over. She dived on the knob to turn the heat down. Lauren raised one eyebrow and glanced at Joe.
"You and him getting on okay, are you?"
"Fine,"
Clara trilled, bending down for bowls she had already brought out of the cupboard.
Fine,
Lauren repeated in the strangest voice before drifting back to the table and topping up their wine glasses.
Anything else to do?
Joe had got up and was standing in the kitchen, filling the small space. Clara felt the wine going to her head.
All good, just a few more minutes.
Thanks for this, for inviting me, he said,
his voice soft, at odds with the Joe she'd glimpsed in the shop earlier that day. Which was the real one?
It's fine. You live here, she shrugged,
feeling a sliver of guilt as she watched his eyes dull.
Not for long, maybe, she added,
wondering why she was ruining things, unable to suppress the anger she'd felt earlier.
About that, Joe said, taking a step forward. I should have said something to you about going to see them.
Or you could have not asked him,
Clara pointed out, her voice raised a fraction. Joe opened his mouth to say something and then closed it again.
It's not your decision, he said quietly.
I'm not sure it's yours either, she said, switching the heat off and fetching a ladle.
It's my mother's home,
Joe said quietly, aware of the sudden hush around the dinner table.
I need to know what her options are.
His hands had curled into fists as he waited for her to respond. The word home had deflated any desire Clara had to fight. This village, this flat, wasn't her home. She used to know exactly where her home was, but that was gone now, and she wondered if she would ever feel the same about anywhere else. Joe's chin lifted, preparing for battle. She shrugged wearily.
You're right. It's none of my business, she admitted in a small voice. She's your mother.
She stepped round him and called to the others.
Let's eat pudding.
She looked at Joe, wanting to move on. He nodded once. They returned to the table where Lauren was trying to teach Gavin how to say the word hygge.
No, Gavin, it's hoo-gar, she said, her mouth in an impossible shape. Hygge? No, hoo-gar. Hygge.
They all fell about laughing, and Clara pronounced it again for them slowly, listening as they started copying her with varying degrees of success.
What does it actually mean, anyway?
Gavin asked, still opening and closing his mouth as he attempted it again.
Well, there's no literal translation, Lauren dived in, sounding like the Danish tourist board, but it sort of means cozy, doesn't it, Clara? It's why she's always lighting candles. The theory is that if things are cozy and beautiful and hygge, then you're happy. And Danish people are officially the happiest people in the world, so it must work.
She turned to Clara as if wanting a pat on the head. Clara didn't feel like the happiest person in the world right now, but not wanting to break the mood, she joined in, trying her best to explain the concept that English people were so fascinated by.
It's not just about candles and things. It's a way of life, I suppose. What you prioritize. The thinking is that if we stay inside our homes, surround ourselves with friends, family, good food and beautiful things, then we'll have a perfect hygelig time.
Joe was quiet, and Clara wondered if he was listening to her, or whether he was still going over their conversation in the kitchen.
See? Lauren said, it's the secret to happiness.
Is that why you want to buy that absurdly expensive light? Patrick said, turning to her. The one you showed me online.
It's an Arne Jacobsen, Lauren said loftily, and as Clara will tell you, it's pretty vital to my well-being.
She was waggling her eyebrows at Clara meaningfully. Clara stepped in.
Oh, yes, absolutely, it's vital, Patrick. Hygge is all about lighting.
"Absurdly expensive lighting," Patrick grumbled, spooning up the last of his dessert.
"Don't you want a hygge home?"
Lauren asked.
"Not that fussed, actually," he said through a mouthful. "I'm quite happy with the lighting we've already got. Won't something from IKEA do the job?
No! Chorused Lauren and Clara. Clara felt her spirits lift, and when everyone had finished eating, she was happy to settle on the sofa with a glass of dessert wine, dipping her head onto Lauren's shoulder. Gavin had left with a quiet goodbye, and Patrick and Joe were washing up.
So, Lauren whispered, how's it going with...
She jerked her head towards the two men, who were chatting comfortably at the sink. Clara rolled her eyes in response.
Gah!
She said.
Ooh-gah!
Lauren giggled.
No, definitely not hoo-gah,
Clara sighed.
In fact, she lifted her head and looked at Lauren. I officially admit defeat.
Chapter 23 Joe was twitchy that night, hugging the hot water bottle as if it might offer some answers. He thought back to Clara standing whisking cream in the kitchen, her blonde hair shimmering under the lights, the slight quiver of her body. She'd been cross with him, but he'd wanted her to understand. He did regret not warning her about the estate agent, but he also wanted her to realize that he needed to look out for his mother, his crazy, carefree mother who did things on a whim. It had all gone wrong, though. He hadn't explained anything, just watched the sparkle fade in her eyes. She had a right to be cross. She'd revived the shop, and watching her in there with the customers had made him realize that she really might just be there to help, because she was that kind of person. He huffed and turned onto his side. Was he being naive? She might look all wide-eyed, running around, chatting and laughing with children, but was all that an act? A facade? Was she planning something? The way she had looked at him, as if accusing him of profiting from his own mother, made his fists curl even now. The little devil on his shoulder kept whispering as he turned this way and that in bed, the pill packet on the bedside table unopened. He looked over at it for the 100th time that night, but something stopped him from reaching out and picking it up. He dreamt of Clara. Her smooth skin, her straight teeth, her laugh as she explained another Danish phrase for the table. In between sleep and waking, he replayed every conversation, thought back to the things she had done for him, the small kindnesses. She thought about her explanation of Hygge, and knew that was a philosophy for the way she lived her life. He had paid so many professionals to help him find a way of being happier with his lot. Had he missed something so simple? When he started to see the outline of a new day edging around the curtains, he pulled them aside to look at the hint of pink leaking over the horizon, the soft morning light resting on the fields, and felt for a moment as if he was seeing the landscape for the first time. No wonder his mother wanted to wake up to this view. He found himself pushing on his trainers, grabbing his scarf, and sneaking out of the bedroom. If Hygge was all about cosiness and simple pleasures, he could Hygge with the best of them. He paused at the door, looking back at the pill packet and his mobile phone on the bedside table. Then he turned and stepped outside, creeping past Lady Carcar, he could do without her announcing his presence, to the stairs beyond. The morning was fresh, the pavement still damp from last night's rain, lightly dusted with droplets. He moved away from the shop, along the high street, dipping down a cobbled side street to a footpath he used to pound along as a young boy. The entrance to the field behind was narrower than he remembered. He squeezed himself through, his coat sleeve snagging on a bramble. Bugger! He swore, causing a flock of birds in the field to flap upwards as a group and away. Shite! Not completely Hygge, then. He didn't get far before he realized that the field was squelching beneath his feet, mud oozing over the sides of his trainers. But it felt good to be out as the sun was coming up, not another soul around, a thick line of trees in front of him reminding him of a carefree couple of years dodging and diving, screaming and racing with the other children in the village, before he became a too-cool teenager. For the first time in years, he wondered what had happened to the kids he'd played with then, who'd come into the shop to marvel at the shelves. Were they still around? Did they have their own kids? Did they still come to these woods? The rumble of his stomach finally turned him around, and by the time he returned to the high street, there were a few cars at the curb, people moving about. He thought of Clara and the constant meals she had produced for him, and ducked into the shop to buy some things for breakfast. Roz was standing behind the counter, flicking the pages of a magazine too quickly to be reading the articles, hair drawn back into a bun that stretched the skin on her face.
"Joe," she said, one penciled eyebrow raised.
"You're early. I've only just opened. Are you here to talk about the shop? Has Paul got back to you with a figure already? You know estate agents, though, greedy bastards, always overestimate. What did he say?"
He found himself shaking his head. He didn't want to talk about the shop. Seeing Roz had reminded him of the previous day, and all he wanted was to buy breakfast.
"I haven't spoken to him yet," he said, whipping around the shop and throwing items into his basket as quickly as was humanly possible. Part-baked rolls, butter, cereal, coffee, sausages. He was reminded of Supermarket Sweep, curling up with his mother on the sofa and screaming at the television as clueless people got lost in amongst the produce.
"It's not in the dairy section, fools!"
The thought made him smile as he approached the counter.
"Someone's happy," Roz said, swiping the first item over the scanner.
Joe wasn't about to explain, mumbling about the lovely weather instead.
"Hardly. No doubt your mother is seeing more sunshine in Greece or wherever it is she's swanned off to."
Joe didn't feel like correcting her, watching her swiping become increasingly aggressive.
"Swedish girl going to be staying long?"
she asked, keying one of the barcodes into the till, fingernail tapping sharply on the buttons.
"Danish," Joe corrected. "Not sure," he admitted, realizing it was true.
Suddenly the prospect of Clara leaving wasn't a welcome one.
"Well, it's all Europe, isn't it? All foreign," she added.
Joe wasn't listening, keen to get back to the flat. He thrust notes at her and accepted the change with a nod, picking up the bags and heading out with a shouted thanks. Roz was still talking as he pulled open the door to leave. Clara wasn't up when he returned, unless she too had gone out early. He thought back to her weary look last night and imagined she'd needed the sleep. He started throwing things into pans, the sizzle of sausages enough to tempt anyone to get up. Sure enough, minutes later she had appeared in her bedroom door, blonde hair sticking up at the back, mascara on one cheek, yawning in striped pajamas. Looking over at him, she seemed to jolt awake.
"Just need to go to the bathroom," she said, about to move away.
Joe stepped forward, both hands out as if dealing with a dangerous dog.
"I'm making breakfast." "I thought we could eat together," he said,
enjoying watching her expression change. She couldn't hide her surprise.
I can't. I promised Gavin I'd meet him this morning. I'm helping him sort things for the pub. I'm late, actually," she said, stepping over to the bathroom.
He felt his face fall, turning back to the hiss of the frying pan.
"Right. Sounds good,"
he said in a faux cheerful voice. She seemed to be wavering near the bathroom.
"Any plans?" she asked, her voice softer. Was she feeling guilty?
"Just work. The usual."
His bark of laughter sounded forced.
"Oh, right, of course. Work," she repeated.
She headed into the bathroom, closing the door as he loaded up his plate with too many rolls and sausages. Of course she didn't want to have breakfast with him after what he'd said to her last night. Should he say something to her when she came out? He bit into a sausage roll, eyes on the bathroom door. He started when she came out, and a piece of sausage fell onto his plate. Moments later, she'd emerged from her bedroom dressed in a baby blue jumper and black jeans.
"Hope work goes well," she said in a rush, not quite meeting his eye as she walked past him to the table. He barely had time to respond before she was closing the front door, her steps heavy on the stairs beyond. He looked around the flat, which seemed cavernous without anyone else in it, though Lady Carcar, suddenly screaming,
"Nobody puts baby in the corner,"
reminded him that he wasn't completely alone. He scraped most of the breakfast into the bin, feeling his shoulders sag as he moved across to his bedroom. He supposed he should work, catch up on the news from the city. He hadn't been keeping much of an eye on things this week, and it was good to have a handle on share prices and recruitment. If anything significant was happening, his bosses would want them to be the first firm in there with a solution. He sat on the foot of the bed, his earlier calm fading as his mobile announced that he had 14 new emails. It was Sunday, though. Surely he didn't need to respond to those now. If Tom asked, he could say he was working on a potential deal with a new client, or looking over some figures. He supposed some people were just having breakfast with their families, not thinking about their mobiles. Tom didn't have a family. Decisively, he switched off the phone and flung it onto the other side of the bed. Then he grabbed his dressing gown from the back of the door, rifled through the bookshelf in the living room, and headed to the bathroom.
"I see dead people,"
squawked Lady Carcar as he passed.
"Attention seeker," he grinned.
He had the place to himself, he remembered as he rested back against the door. He could have a completely hygge day. Spotting a box of matches, he lit the dozens of candles in jars that Clara had dotted around the room. When he pulled the blind down and switched off the overhead light, the effect was immediate and satisfying, with calming pools of light in every corner, dancing in the bathroom mirror and making his skin glow orange. He smiled at his reflection, feeling his good mood slowly returning. As the bath ran, he rifled through the toiletries on offer, pausing for a moment to slather sea mud on his face before liberally pouring bubble bath into the steaming water. Lowering himself in, he rested his head back, picked up the book he'd found, and started to read, enjoying the warmth and the silence as he slipped down into the water, feeling the tickle of the bubbles on the end of his nose. Twisting the tap on and off with his foot to top up the hot water, he became immersed in his book. With no clock in the bathroom, he wasn't sure how much time had passed, but the ache in his muscles had eased and his hands were decidedly wrinkled as he relaxed back against the enamel. A sudden bang from outside made him lurch up in the water, splaying droplets. Had Roddy leapt from a great height? Had Lady Carcar escaped the cage? The door handle rattled and Joe jerked to a sitting position, his hands covering his modesty where the bubbles failed to do so, just as Clara appeared in the doorway. For a moment she stared down at him, then she shoved one hand over her eyes and backed out again, closing the door behind her.
"God, sorry, I..." Why hadn't he locked the door? What was she doing back?
"Just a second,"
he called in a voice about 3 octaves higher than normal.
"No, it's fine, I'm sorry, I..."
She was gabbling outside the door as he leapt out of the water and grabbed at his dressing gown.
"Hold on,"
he said, shoving his arms into the sleeves and opening the door again, steam escaping in a cloud. Clara's mouth fell open as she looked at him standing there, dripping. He tightened his bottle-green dressing gown, wondering what was so surprising. He was aware that the bathroom was still flickering with candlelight and that the bath was filled with a mountain of bubbles. The whole flat had also started smelling of lavender. Then, feeling the tightness in his face, he remembered the mud mask that he hadn't washed off. His cheeks flaming underneath it, he turned back into the bathroom and slammed the door. Leaning against it, he closed his eyes. What a complete prat. He would have paid so much money to rewind the last 5 minutes. To emerge smelling of aftershave, leaving behind an immaculate bathroom, nodding calmly at her as he passed. He stared at his reflection in the mirror, his lips enormous, his skin tinged green, the whites of his eyes exaggerated.
He scrubbed at his face, his jaw red from the effort, rinsing and splashing until all trace of the mud was gone, and he could emerge back into the living room with his head held high.
"I had a bath," he said in a small voice.
"Good idea," she said, now sitting on the sofa, the remote in one hand, the TV still switched off. Was that the smallest shake of her shoulders? He stepped quickly towards his room, not trusting himself to say anything more.
"You can't handle the truth,"
announced Lady Carcar.
"I'm briefly forgiving you for the QI saga because I don't have anyone else to tell about Corralejo. It's marvellous. Lots of restaurants and more of a buzzing nightlife here. I've made a lot of German friends and we all go off to the sandy beach together, which is so long you lose sight of it. I've tried bodyboarding because Klaus lent me his board, and although I swallowed half the sea, I had the most amount of fun. There's no surfing in Suffolk, that's for sure. We've taken a trip out to Lobos. It's a tiny island, uninhabited, just off the coast. We went there in a small fishing boat that rocked from side to side so violently I thought we might all be flung overboard, and I don't want to die before using the half load on the dishwasher. I really must find out what it means. Does it only clean half the things? So we got to the other side just about intact and were released to roam around the island. It was a glorious day, a breeze lifting the back of my hair. I've entirely given up wearing hats and now sport lots of coloured scarves as headbands. I like to think I look a little like Greta Garbo, but I fear I look more like an ancient cleaning lady who has lost her way. There's a volcano on the island, well, half a volcano, and you can climb up and peer down over the side where there's black sand below. It's really rather creepy. Then off back to the jetty where you can swim in shallow turquoise waters and see shoals of silver fish darting back and forth just below the surface. What do you mean, sell? Did Joe really invite someone round? I don't want to sell. It sounds like things are going very merrily in my absence, and I'm sure Clara is running it brilliantly. I have to say I'm a little bit jealous hearing about dinner at the flat. What do you mean she has done a good deal with rugs and candles? What is Hygge? It sounds very strange. Is she, in fact, some kind of Danish cult leader? Will I return to discover you have handed over all your life savings and are living in a commune in a field behind the pub? I must try ringing Joe, but it is such a bore always getting his rather depressed-sounding PA, who generally tells me he's on an international conference call, which sounds frightfully important. So I bottle things and never leave him a message. I can't imagine he'd be there to cause trouble, but he is protective and he's always had my best interests at heart. He can't help acting like the most frightful alpha male. I think I overcompensated when David left me, imagining that a young boy alone with his mother would turn out to be an outrageous sissy, utterly bullied at school. So I used to take him to boxing matches and let him watch all the Die Hard films long before he was 18. Maybe I damaged him permanently. Tell him I do appreciate him trying to help, but I trust Clara, and you, of course.
Chapter 24. She'd only returned to the flat for her purse. Gavin was taking her to Norwich to choose some things for the pub. They'd discussed ideas, taken measurements for new furniture, and he was now waiting, engine running, in the high street below, eager to get on and purchase his new look. She had just thought she'd popped the loo when she'd burst in on him. She hadn't seen anything much. Just pink flesh and an absurd amount of bubbles. Then his startled face covered in that green mask had emerged, looking horrified. It was as if she'd caught him in flagrante, he was so tense. She felt the awkwardness of the night before fade away as she stood there staring at him. He was wearing his smart dressing gown with the embroidered emblem on the outside pocket. His hair spiked up and his face covered in mud, and had looked as if he wanted the ground to swallow him up. She thought it was the first time she might have glimpsed something of the real Joe. She was thinking about it in the car all the way to Norwich, replaying the scene in her head, trying desperately hard not to giggle. He had lit all the candles, pretended not to notice the bath still covered in bubbles. The scent as if he'd crushed 100 lavender plants underfoot. She felt a glimmer of hope that perhaps he wasn't the lost cause she'd written off. Perhaps he was able to change. She couldn't wait to report back to Lauren. She'd be careful not to tell her too much. There was something so helpless about him standing there in his bare feet, lost for words, that she didn't want him to feel she was mocking him. On the other hand, he was still about to sell the shop without consulting his mum, and he was still surgically attached to his mobile. His expression, though, as he'd stood in the doorway of the bathroom, surrounded by the scent of lavender.
"You all right?" Gavin asked, giving her a sideways glance.
She nodded, settling back into the passenger seat as she tried to help Gavin make a decent word out of four I's, a T, a U, and an F.
"Footily?"
she suggested.
"Not helpful."
"Foot?
Is that a word?" he sounded surprised. "Probably. Somewhere in the world." Clara shrugged, feeling a lot more carefree, looking forward to the day ahead overhauling the pub.
"Not helpful either."
They loaded up the car with cushions, rugs, lamps and more, cramming items into the boot and lowering the back seats to jam everything in. They made slow progress back, stopping to pick up food, which they ate as they talked. Back at the pub, they started by dragging all the furniture to the edge of the room, stacking stools and chairs on tables and going over the swirled carpet with a hoover. They'd brought rugs to cover it, in warm shades of red, touches of black. They polished the tables and rearranged the furniture, admiring the effect of the dark wood and the deep colours. The creamy walls and the dark timber beams blended brilliantly. The bare lights were covered in lampshades that muted the harsh bulbs and created an instant calm. Gavin had cleared out the old fireplace and stacked logs in rows on either side, then reached into the enormous space to build a fire in the large iron coal pit. They placed cushions on the armchairs, wiped down dusty board games and displayed them on a wooden bookcase, along with a selection of novels and biographies that the villagers could borrow. They placed large clear jars on mantelpieces, tables and windowsills, and filled them with enormous cream wax candles, their poker-straight wicks waiting to be lit. They hung a few pictures on the walls and hoisted a large antique mirror over the fireplace. The day passed quickly, and Clara was aware that the shop window needed dressing too. She still had to plan the finer details of the next display. She had plenty of time, though, and it was great to see Gavin completely absorbed, now cleaning every bottle behind the bar. The place did look fantastic, transformed into a gorgeous, warm and welcoming country pub. As the light faded, they lit the fire and the candles and sat drinking pale ale in the armchairs, their feet up on worn leather poofs, toasting their aching limbs and enjoying the reaction as locals wandered in, drawn by the orange glow of the fire and staying to listen to the crackle of the logs and chat in cosy corners. Clive walked in, talking on his phone, then looked up and ground to a halt. "Wow!" he said, before remembering his phone call and hastily lifting the phone to his ear once more. Gavin was serving a customer at the bar as Clara got up to leave. He looked across at her as she placed her glass on the counter. "Hang on a minute, Clara," he said, tipping a pint glass away from him and pouring a lager. She paused, watching him slide the drink across the bar, wipe his hands and reach into his pocket.
"Something to say thank you. Just small, but wanted you to know I appreciate everything."
He handed her a package and she opened it to reveal a beautiful thin silver chain.
"So glad you turned up in our village," he said, his voice gruff. "You're a great girl. If I'd had a daughter, I'd have liked her to be just like you."
Clara felt tears thicken the back of her throat as she stared at the necklace. Unable to do much more than nod, she gave Gavin a one-armed hug and staggered away. "If I'd had a daughter..." The words rang in her ears all the way home. Would he have said that if he knew what kind of daughter she had been? She pushed her way into the shop, not wanting to go up to the flat, needing to be alone for a bit. The new display was the perfect distraction. Laying out all the items she'd need, she got to work on the backdrop, creating a wild forest from various rolls of green fabric and scattering leaves collected on her walks over the bottom of the shop window. Next, she glued the figures into position, attaching a long plait to a Barbie, placing a Ken doll on bended knee. The story of Rapunzel was coming to life, the magic wrapping round her, allowing her to forget her mood, forget everything else going on in her life, and simply create a scene. Chapter 25. Clara was starting to become familiar with the trails through the woods. Even in winter there were things to see. Bare spiked branches, curled leaves like a carpet on the ground. That morning, she had stumbled across a patch of perfectly formed toadstools, their tops livid red scattered with yellow spots, like a scene from her latest window display. She'd been in the shop all morning and needed this release, the new display finished. Frost was still clinging to the branches of the tree, the fields glistening with silver. Patches of the small stream had frozen, leaves and other debris stuck in the ice. She enjoyed the quiet of the forest, the small ticks and chatter of the insects around her, the call of a nearby bird, the flutter of wings, something rustling in the undergrowth. She sat drinking hot chocolate from her thermos flask, perched on a fallen tree trunk, her bottom growing numb from the cold but not wanting to move on yet. The rustling grew louder, and behind her she heard a bark followed by a voice shouting, "Gus! No, no, Gus, leave!" She stood up, spinning around in the direction of the noise, twigs breaking underfoot, the crunch of leaves panting, another bark. Then into the small clearing bounded a cocker spaniel, a bush swishing as it snapped back into place. Clara smiled, stepping forward to crouch down, the dog racing towards her, ears flapping, burrs stuck to his curled fur, placing a paw on her jeans, leaving a muddy mark. She ruffled his head, grinning as he spun round her in excitement, left, then right.
"Gus, I said..."
"Oh." Sam appeared in the clearing, straightening as he saw Clara with his dog.
"Ah, oh, you found him," he said,
pulling out a lead from the pocket of his wax jacket. Today his hair was windswept, his cheeks pink with the cold and the exercise.
"He's immune to my voice," he sighed as Gus jumped up, placing both paws on Clara's thighs. "God, I'm really sorry. Sit, Gus!"
Gus proceeded to hold out one paw as if he was begging. Clara giggled.
"Sila."
Gus sat down immediately and she turned to Sam.
"Maybe he's Danish."
"Bloody nightmare is what he is," Sam said, moving forward to pop the dog's lead back on.
"Thanks.
We didn't mean to disturb you."
For a brief moment, Clara wondered if he had followed her. Then she dismissed the thought.
"Hark at you, Clara Christensen. You're no celebrity to be tracked down by random men."
"Not at all. I was heading back soon anyway. I'm exhausted. There's a new display up tomorrow."
"Of course," Sam nodded. "Amber reminded me yesterday. I'll have to bring her down to see it. She loved your last one, although they're costing me a fortune," he added.
Clara smiled, watching his hand reach down to stroke behind Gus's ears.
"I'll walk back to the village with you. I don't want to spend the rest of the day chasing this one through the woods."
She was still staring at his left hand, noticing an absence of rings.
"Great, great," she said, a little too enthusiastically, feeling her skin warm despite the chill in the air.
They wound their way back down one of the narrow paths, Sam holding back branches to stop them snapping towards her, offering her a hand as they reached a particularly churned-up section.
"Thanks," Clara said, feeling a little stupid, since the mud was stiff with ice and she could walk across easily, her boots not sinking.
They emerged from the line of trees, the sun hazy through a blanket of thick white cloud, the edges rimmed with pale pink.
"I love this light," Sam said, echoing Clara's own thoughts. "It's perfect for photography. I've taken so many pictures at this time of day."
"You're a landscape photographer too?" Clara queried.
Sam nodded.
"All sorts of photography. It works well with the writing. I've sold a few pictures."
He shrugged, his face suffused with pleasure.
"And it's a great hobby when you're alone a lot," he added, giving her a sideways glance.
Clara found her face growing warm under his gaze.
"How wonderful.
I can't take a decent picture. I get too distracted.
And I don't understand all the knobs and buttons."
He raised one eyebrow then, making her look away as if she'd said something shocking. She laughed nervously, grateful that Gus decided to squeeze in between them, staring up at her as if waiting for a treat. Sam was still looking at her, his head cocked to one side.
"You've got fantastic skin," he said.
She felt her cheeks fill with heat, not used to compliments. She spluttered a thanks.
"I'd love to take your photograph again. An outdoors shoot, perhaps?" he said, smiling broadly.
She noticed a spot of stubble on his chin that he'd missed shaving. Wondered what it would be like to reach out and touch it.
"No, no, I'm not at all photogenic," she said, pulling her hat down over her ears. "I just freeze up or shut my eyes or both."
"No, you're the perfect subject," Sam said with a high laugh that didn't match his voice.
Clara walked on, Sam falling into step again beside her. They stepped over the stile, Gus running under it, getting the lead caught so that Sam was hauled back, as if he'd forgotten he had a dog on a lead.
"Well,"
Clara said as the burgundy facade of the shop came into view.
"That's me."
She pointed to it, wondering why she felt the need to do that. He knew exactly where the shop was, visited it often. He stopped outside, staring at the drawn-down shutters.
"What is it?"
"You'll have to wait and see," Clara said.
"Come on,"
he said, his eyes roving as if he had X-ray vision in his glasses.
"Can I have a clue?"
Clara let out a small laugh.
"Let's just say I adore fairy tales,"
she said, searching for her key. She sensed movement somewhere above her, distracted from looking by Sam.
"Amber will love it, then."
"Look," he said, resting a hand on her arm so that she froze, staring at it, his fingernails cut perfectly square.
"Let me write another piece. This is bound to be great, and lots of people have shown an interest in the shop."
"I'm not sure," Clara said, biting her lip.
"I saw the estate agent in there the other day," he said quietly. "There's more of an angle on the story now. Let me help. It's really relevant at the moment, with high streets failing, shops being forced to shut. We can try and save yours."
His voice lifted at the end. She pulled her arm away gently.
"It's not mine," she reminded him.
"Well, let's see if we can't at least get some more trade in the run-up to Christmas," he said, renewing the attack.
There was movement again. Was that the curtain in the flat swinging back? A figure? She wondered if Joe was there watching.
"Okay, just a short article, maybe," she said.
There was no harm in that, was there?
"Just to bring in customers for Christmas, nothing more," she said in a warning voice.
"Of course, great. Promise," he said,
leaning in and giving her a kiss on the cheek.
"And maybe I'll persuade you then."
His green eyes twinkled at her. Clara tipped her head to one side.
"Persuade me?"
He lifted his hands as if he had an imaginary camera and snapped at her.
"Goodbye. Good luck with it," he said, walking backwards, pointing at the window.
Gus barked a goodbye too, and she held up one hand in a half wave, watching them both disappear down the high street, Gus bounding next to Sam, barking in glee. Would she regret what she had just agreed to? Chapter 26.